stop for a second to think about your breath. The air coming in, filling your lungs, exhaling. It's something you do all the time, and if you're like most, it's easy, thoughtless. But imagine that now you had to draw all your air through a straw. Just think how much less oxygen you'd be able to get in, and how much less CO2 you could get out. For people with chronic respiratory conditions, this is what breathing feels like, and the constant breathlessness is further punctuated by crises where breath seems almost unachievable.
Do you swim, surf?
Yeah, sure.
Sure? All right.
This is Sue Griffin.
Yes, Sue.
And I'm calling Sue in her home where she's comfortable and has oxygen close at hand. She suffers from breathlessness and says a bad attack can feel a bit like when things go wrong during a swim or a surf.
And then you start to try and get out of that water and you are trying to reach the top and you're trying to reach the air. And your breath is getting shorter and your lungs are getting tighter.
For some time, Sue didn't know why she was so breathless.
Initially, doctors classed it as a cold.
Then bronchitis.
Then it was pneumonia.
When Sue went back to the GP, they basically just said get to the hospital.
Do not pass code, do not collect $200. And go and get some air.
Before this, Sue worked in office management, but her issues with breathing put an end to her career.
It went from virtually, I am capable, I am working, I am good at my job, to bedridden in hospital within 2 to 3 weeks.
So chronic breathlessness really is breathlessness that doesn't go away despite the optimal treatment of the underlying disease. It's very common in diseases like COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. You also get it with lung cancer, with asthma, of course, as most people would know.
This is Dr. Tim Luckett. He's a senior lecturer in the Faculty of Health at the University of Technology, Sydney.
If you think about having breathlessness every day, even when you try to do the most minimally stressful things, like hang the washing out, even walk to the bathroom for some people, you can imagine how that would reduce your world and your ability to go out, to engage with other people, just to do the everyday things that we all take for granted.
Tim and a team of researchers are looking at breathlessness to investigate the profound impact it has on people's lives from a mental and a physical health perspective. But apart from the heavy burden breathlessness can put on people's health, it can also have a really heavy burden on the health system.
People going to emergency for when they experience what's called a breathlessness crisis on top of their everyday chronic breathlessness. So that's when people get a spike in their breathlessness. They often panic and they go to emergency. And interestingly, the research suggests that about half of those ED presentations are avoidable if people had better support in the community and had better self-management strategies in place.
COPD, or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, is actually the second most common cause of avoidable presentations in emergency departments. What Tim wanted to know is whether breathlessness sufferers themselves had the power to change this.
Our most recent research project has been talking to people with breathlessness every day and who experience these spikes or crises and who have had experience of avoiding one or more ED presentation. And most importantly, were glad in hindsight that they did avoid. And I should emphasise that sometimes, of course, you do have to go to hospital with these breathlessness episodes. And it's trying to figure out the times when you should go and the times that you shouldn't, the warning signs, the factors associated with those, that's really of major interest.
Sometimes, with breathlessness, hospital is the answer. But what Tim is saying is that at other times, with the right tools, some people do manage to tackle their crises at home.
it's very difficult to avoid a crisis completely. What maybe you may be able to do is to actually knock that crisis on the head fairly quickly, you know, reduce it escalating rapidly, getting worse, getting into this vicious cycle with panic, which then makes the breathlessness worse, which then makes the anxiety worse, and then actually really take a cool, calm, collected approach to deciding whether or not you need to go to emergency, really based on whether you're able to self-manage that breathlessness by yourself.
And are people able to do that?
And so that was what was really incredible about these people we talked to, and I really gained some new heroes through this research, because the ability of some of these people, the expertise they have in self-monitoring, in separating the distress component from the severity of breathlessness component, was really quite amazing.
That's what's really cool about this study. You have researchers going to the patients to talk to them about their expertise and to see if they can help them help others handle their breathlessness. One of these experts, one of Tim's new heroes, is Sue.
I get up and I start doing things, and, you know, I get the cups out and everything's good and all is well in the world, and I'm putting the stuff out and whatnot. And then as I do it, my oxygen levels deteriorate, and I don't pay attention. That's not good. Then it gets to a point where, yeah, I'm okay, but I'm really not. And what happens to the brain, my brain, and this is my opinion anyway, is that my brain starts to deteriorate to a level that doesn't quite understand that I need more oxygen.
But Sue has developed strategies to handle this. She knows what to do.
I can bring myself back by sheer determination of I use this term, breathe in the roses and blow out the candles, which a lot of people with breathlessness use. And what it does is that you breathe in the rose, you have to do it through your mouth, your nose, to get the full perfume. You then get past that and you've got to breathe out. Now, that breathe out is actually more important than the breathe in, because you have to be able to get the carbon monoxide out so that you can get the oxygen in. And if you don't do that, you're not going to succeed in your recovery at all.
But this type of resilience isn't something that Sue's just had to develop now that she has this problem with breathlessness. It's the same skills she would employ when she was having a bad day at work.
And I'd be going, you know, I'm having a really rotten day and, you know, I'm sick of people. I don't want to see anybody. I can't do anything. I'm better off leaving this office for 10 minutes, going downstairs, doing some meditation, doing some whatever. And then I come back as a human.
And Tim found this with a lot of the people who developed a strong response to breathlessness, that they're actually really special.
They were able to look on these types of problems as challenges. They rose to these as challenges. So these were kind of super people.
Having talked to Sue, I agree with Tim. She is a super person. A super person who's been faced with some really heavy burdens.
And they said, all right, now we're at this stage where lung transplant is the only solution for your disease. And I kind of went, well, that was a bit of a backhander. And we talked about it a bit, and not much. And the doctor said, is there anything else you need to know? And I said, oh, well, they just told me across the road that I have cancer. And he said, sorry, you can't have the treatment.
You can't have the transplant?
No.
This year, Sue was told that there isn't much they can do about her cancer either. They sent her home to be with her family and to receive palliative care. But her experience with breathlessness has made her really keen to help others, to share her experiences.
I look at others who have got problems and I kind of almost feel like going and tapping them on the shoulder and saying, look, hate to be a bother, but...
Yeah, you sound like you've had a really rough year. The way that Tim explained this to me, I mean, he made people like you seem exceptional, that in the face of an attack of breathlessness, you can be rational enough to help yourself. Because it is scary.
It is.
But, I mean, you're the exception, right? A lot of people haven't or might not be able to develop the strategies that you've developed.
That's concerned me. And I thought when I started to come out of that area of not being totally rational about how to breathe and the techniques that are required, and I went looking, literally, looking for people, groups, support groups, anything that would help me learn that. I couldn't find anything. I could not find anybody who could support me to learn how to take this to the next level.
And this is exactly what Tim is trying to fix.
We do need more pulmonary rehabilitation services to be accessible to people with COPD and other respiratory conditions and to help them learn these types of strategies. And the other thing, I guess, to stress is that I think we really need more research into understanding this vicious circle between breathlessness and then the distress and the panic that that causes and how that they just make each other worse and they go round and round in circles. And that's really not very well understood. And we really need to know, you know, where are the critical points we can intervene to help people break that vicious cycle and actually, you know, stop themselves from escalating out of control.
There is no fail-safe strategy for dealing with breathlessness. But the information Tim got from experts like Sue means we are one step closer to helping people to break the cycle of panic. And if that story raised any concerns for you, you can contact Lifeline on 131114.